Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey everybody, Max Boltman here alongside Corey Prodman, back with another episode of the Athletic Hockey Show's Prospect Series. Today we're going to be wrapping up Storylines Week here on the Athletic Hockey Show. Got some fun stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about our Calder finalists. We're going to talk about prospect pools that we think are going to break out. This is going to be our last episode for a few weeks here. We're just going to take a quick hiatus while the season gets underway. So we're really going to set the stage for everything we're going to be watching for throughout the start of the season here, and really most of the season in the prospect realm. So I'm looking forward to today's show. And Corey, we're going to start off with some college hockey, actually, because one of the most interesting prospect teams in the world is right up the road from me at the University of Michigan, where there's four of the top five picks from last year's draft, a bunch of first rounders on that team, and they are just starting to get underway.
Yeah, University of Michigan played against Bowling Green in an exhibition game, so that did not count towards their standings last Saturday, where they won 7-1. And even though it was an exhibition game, it was a very interesting game for people across the hockey world to observe because of the abundance of talent on that team. You mentioned the four top five picks, Owen Power, number one to Buffalo, Matthew Beniers, second to Seattle, Luke Hughes, who went four to New Jersey, and then Kent Johnson, who went 5-2 Columbus. Beniers and Johnson played on a line together. Owen Power played huge minutes, and Luke Hughes was also a prominent part of that team. And it was just a very exciting team to watch for those reasons. You're just seeing the type of skill and hockey sense that's on this team to go with guys like Power and Hughes, who have tremendous skating ability, and Power size obviously is a variable. And you were also interested in, you know, Thomas Bortolo and Brendan Brisson. Brisson, I thought, had one of his best games I've ever seen him in a Michigan sweater. And that's with the caveat that John Beecher, a first-round pick by Boston, and Mackie Samuskevich, a first-round pick by Florida, were not even playing in that game. And yet it still felt like Michigan had the puck the entire time. Bowling Green is not expected to be a top five or top 10 team in the NCAA this season, but there's still a program that's used to playing competitive hockey, particularly one that tends to be a little bit on the older side, so it can push some of the more skilled rosters. And it just felt like Michigan was in control for large portions of that game.
Well, it's huge when you talk about Brisson having one of his better games. I mean, he's a guy who has a big shot, but when you look at where this team could really take a step forward, if he takes a step forward and he's able to be a goal scorer on that team, you know, last year, a lot of the standouts, he gets overshadowed a little bit by Thomas Bordalo, by Kent Johnson, by Matthew Beniers. You add him in there as a sophomore year, if he makes that sophomore leap. I mean, I know probably a lot of our listeners care about these guys primarily as NHL prospects, but for a team in Michigan, that's a huge difference maker to have a guy who's going to be that level of finisher taking kind of that next step.
Yeah, and I think he's got really good skill in hockey sense. He can see the ice very well, too. I think when you actually watch the power play, he was the guy on the half wall. When you think of all the options they have there, to be given the half wall option is a huge sign of confidence by the coaching staff. We'll see if that changes when Sam Iskevich comes in or not. But I thought he was really impressive. And I thought, you know, not surprisingly, Owen Power was extremely impressive in that game. Even though Luke Hughes did not get the prime power play time, I thought, he had a positive game, and it just in general, they are just a fun team to watch. You know, I was talking to scouts who were watching that game, and we all kind of shared a similar sentiment that we were watching the game, but it was almost as much entertainment for us as sports are for a lot of people, you know, but as it was us, you know, trying to watch the players and learn about the players, because it was just that kind of game.
There's a Globetrotter effect when those guys go out on the power play, where you're just kind of looking to see, it's not even so much, are they going to be dangerous? It's like, what are they going to do to be dangerous, or how are they going to make this look? I mean, there was one sequence on one of the Brisson goals. I think it was Johnson who's on the left flank. He goes behind the back to Power. Power slides it right across to Brisson. Brisson wires it into the net. And it's, you know, my friends, I went to Michigan, right? So my friends in my college DMs are like sending this clip like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And it's like that might be what it's like for those guys all year this year.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of hoping they're going to be the Tampa Bay Lightning of college hockey. That's at least right. On the power play. You know, you don't want to get too excited about a team based on one exhibition game. You might recall they crushed ASU last year.
And that was a regulation game. That was a real game.
Yeah, and you know, ASU was a solid team that season. They weren't a top team, but they were, you know, they weren't a team that got rolled over by everybody. So it's a long season. We'll see what happens when they get into the conference games, when they got to go up against a team like Minnesota, for example, or when they go to the icebreaker tournament now. And I think they're playing either Duluth or Providence in one of those games. Those are good teams. We'll see how that goes.
Great coaches on both teams too. I mean, those teams are going to come to know how to defend skill.
Yeah. Well, also one of those coaches is the World Junior coach.
That's right. Yeah. Matthew Beniers has a pretty distinct interest in playing well in that game, and Thomas Bordalo as well, and Brisson as well.
Well, Brisson actually aged out of the World Juniors.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, had a late birth date. But yeah, no, we'll see how the entire season goes. And one game is not predictive of how an entire season goes. Well, there's going to be times where they're not going to score. And there's going to be games where they score a lot. And the most talented team in college hockey does not always win, particularly win in the playoffs and in the national championship game. And primarily due to the fact that those are single elimination events, and also that, you know, that college hockey tends to have some pretty significant age differences at times between teams, and those can be variables. You look at the UMass team that won the title last year; they had some really talented players. Zach Jones is a very talented player. Mark Delgado was a nice prospect for Nashville. Philip Lindbergh was a very solid college player. Goalie prospect, is he going to be a good pro? Time will tell. They had some, you know, really nice college players like Trevino, but this wasn't what you think of like a team full of first and second round picks. You could argue Zach Jones could have gone there in a redraft, but that wasn't what their roster was composed of, and that's a lot of what winning college hockey teams tend to look like. So I'll be interested to see if this Michigan team can buck that trend. I think sometimes people like myself and others tend to overhype college hockey teams that have the great recruiting classes, when that's not always predictive of collegiate success. But I think this Michigan team has a chance at least to buck that trend.
Well, it's just a rare opportunity to have this kind of roster. I mean, realistically, Beniers and Power could be in the NHL right now, and it wouldn't have surprised many people had they been just, you know, in broad strokes of kind of their readiness as players, especially Beniers' situation in Seattle. Like, that's an expansion team. It wouldn't have been shocking for a number two overall pick to step right into the NHL. It's a big opportunity for Michigan to have a group like this and get these guys in second year. I also think it's a big opportunity for an Owen Power, given what you just mentioned, to go up against teams that maybe are older and maybe built more like these veteran-laden teams. I think that's a really good opportunity and good challenge for him to face that kind of competition and try to be a more veteran player than his maybe years in order to drive a winning team.
Yeah, we will see how Power plays against some of the better teams, but I thought just versus Bowling Green, I didn't think he dominated the game, but there were just a couple of select moments in that game, so whether it was the power play assist you mentioned or just like defensive plays where any other defender looks beat and he just skates back easily, knocks the puck away with his long reach and his and with how quick he moves, and he just eliminates chances so easily, gets the puck way back up the ice. I think he's going to be such a force in college hockey this season, as you would expect for a first overall pick. And this is a unique opportunity to watch this team, but Michigan continues to recruit. All indications are that Luke Hughes is still going to be there in his second year at Michigan. And then they're probably going to bring in Adam Fantilli the next season, who has a really strong chance to be a top five, top three, maybe even a first overall pick in the 2023 draft to go with some other strong recruits. They just recruited somebody from the Tri-City Storm, Gavin Brindley, who I really like. He's got a chance to be a top two round pick in the 2023 draft. And to go with what I presume will still be some good players who will be left there. Samuskevich, I presume, will still be there. Dylan Duke will probably still be there. So I don't think this Michigan, the eyes on the Michigan hockey team are going away anytime soon.
Absolutely.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, now I want to get into kind of more of the NHL side of these prospects. And we do focus a lot on the draft and drafted prospects who haven't yet been in the NHL yet. But there's going to be some really interesting names breaking into the NHL this year, Corey. And that means the Calder debate kind of could be a fun one this year. I think for me, you look at a guy like Cole Caulfield who broke in and got a little bit of a lot of run actually in the playoffs for Montreal last season. And it's easy for me to look at it and say, going into the year, that's probably the guy who I would call the favorite for this award. But you can go down the list and you can see a lot of guys from his draft class, frankly, whether it's Trevor Zegras, Matt Boldy, Spencer Knight. You get into some of the more recent ones, Jamie Drysdale, Moritz Seider. You look at Alexander Holtz, and even some older players, Zach Jones, Shane Pinto. We don't know what Quinton Byfield's health is right now. This could be a really interesting rookie class in the NHL.
Yeah, and you've got a couple of teams there that have a combination of guys, because you have Anaheim with Drysdale and Zegras. You have Detroit with Raymond and Seider. We'll see in Florida what happens with Spencer Knight and Anton Lundell. I don't know if either of them are guaranteed to get a lot of ice time this season, but we'll see how their seasons go. With the Rangers, will Zach Jones be the guy? Will Nils Lundqvist be the guy who takes some of that second power play unit ice time? We'll have to see how those things progress over the course of the season. I think you're definitely right to highlight Cole Caulfield because he played so well in the playoffs last year. And I think a big part of projecting who's going to win the Calder is opportunity. Cole Caulfield looks like he's going to have every opportunity to be a top six forward with power play time this season. I have a hard time seeing someone like, say, a Bowen Byram, getting the big minutes in Colorado to elevate his way into the Calder conversation, even though I think Bowen Byram is an excellent prospect. Whereas in Detroit, there are roster spots for the taking for Lucas Raymond and Mort Sider to come in, and the same thing in Anaheim with Zegras and Drysdale.
Yeah, and Raymond one is interesting. I mean, he's a guy who I don't know that I went into the preseason expecting that he was going to get a roster spot. Part of that is because we didn't know yet that Jacob Vrana was having shoulder surgery that was going to take him out of the lineup for the first 4 months of the season. But part of it's that Raymond has had the kind of, you know, kick the door down preseason so far that I think he was going to need to have to make the team. And there's still preseason left. He's not made the team yet, but he's got 6 points in three games. He's looked pretty consistently dangerous watching him. He's been a big help on their power play. If he makes the team, it's probably in a top six deployment. It's probably in a potentially first power play role, that those things can become pretty predictive of Calder opportunity.
Yeah, and a preseason doesn't always translate into the National Hockey League regular season. There's a long list of guys who do well in the preseason, and then when the lineups are full of all the 6'1", 6'2", guys who can fly and are competing as hard as they can every night, all of a sudden that preseason star doesn't look as shiny anymore. It's why between those two guys, just because Sider is older and stronger and seemed a little bit ahead of Raymond in the SHL last season, it's why I would probably say between the two of them, I would presume Sider's going to have more NHL success this season. But Raymond's preseason has been really interesting. I mean, you watched, say, him or William Eklund in the SHL last season, I would put my money on Eklund being the one to break through, because I thought his skating was such a differentiator, and I thought he played a little bit better versus men last season. But it might end up with both of them making the National Hockey League, and seeing how they do. Like I said, there's always it's a pretty big jump from the preseason to the regular season. So we'll see how it goes. But I love Lucas Raymond. His skill level is truly elite. He can make a ton of plays. His shot is a weapon. His vision is a major weapon. It's just going to be a question of whether he can adjust to the pace of the NHL when the games become real.
Yeah, I don't want to turn this into a Detroit Lucas Raymond thing, but just to kind of put the bow on him, like, to me, it's really been his instincts and his sense that have, I mean, the skill, obviously, yes, but he's making these opportunities with these seam passes on the power play across the slot that are almost no look passes. He's getting on pucks quick and getting them onto the net. Like, it's been a really interesting overall package that you've seen from him, that when you think the game really well, it can mitigate some pace issues, or not even pace issues, but just raw speed issues, I should say.
Yeah, and then the other team that would be really interesting, I think, from a Calder perspective is Anaheim.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with Drysdale and with Zegras there, we're expecting big things. Drysdale still has another year of World Junior eligibility left, but it's hard to imagine him playing at this winter's World Juniors, because of how good he was as a pro last season at the American League level, and then he goes to the NHL, doesn't play like tremendous, but for an 18-year-old, I thought he was much more than competent. He looked like he at least belonged in the league. So I think, in Anaheim, I don't think they're going to be a playoff team this year. I don't think they're going to take a huge step forward, but I think you're looking at those two, and as a Ducks fan, and hoping that they at least show you some signs of better days ahead.
The one thing I'll say about the Calder voting and not being on a playoff team is that I don't think it gets held to quite the same standard of needing to come from a playoff team as maybe the Hart or the Norris does, and that helps. But being on a playoff team just helps your exposure. Like, when you're Anaheim, you're not going to – number one, you're already playing a bunch of 10 p.m. games, which does hurt, I think, West Coast players sometimes. Like, it's just harder to get in front of the eyes, especially for a player like Drysdale, who maybe – his game is, he's obviously a beautiful skater, but he's not necessarily going to be on every single highlight reel in the way that even his own teammate and Trevor Zegras might, or like Cale Makar was two nights ago. Sometimes he will, because the skating pops that much, but you got to get in front of eyeballs too. And I think that's where being on a non-playoff team can hurt guys. And that could be about Detroit. That could be about Anaheim. That could be about San Jose. That could be about a lot of these guys.
Yeah. And I think defensemen just generally have uphill battles. Trevor Zegras is probably the opposite. He is the highlight reel variety. I think there's a path for him to win the Calder Trophy. But, that's why I would look, there are, some guys who are, down, maybe not as quite as talented as, say, Bowen Byram or JV Drysdale as players. But, there's a path there for maybe Connor McMichael in Washington or Shane Pinto in Ottawa. if they make their teams, if they end up in a middle six role, if they're getting points, if they're on the power play, I think there's a path for both of them to potentially have, you know, maybe not win the Calder, but be like top five, get top five votes for those very reasons that you alluded to.
Last year, the Calder Trophy, obviously, Kirill Kaprizov, I think very well deserved. There's another guy in Minnesota this year who I think could be a dark horse, and that's Matthew Boldy. First of all, do we think Matthew Boldy is going to make Minnesota's opening night roster?
It seems like there isn't, isn't going to be an extremely young roster. I don't see Matthew Boldy and Marco Rossi and Adam Beckman making that team. It's probably just going to be one of those three guys. My bet right now is towards Boldy, but given how well he did versus pros last season, if he's not the guy, and I could easily see him be the guy that comes up in the middle of the season if there's an injury or something along those lines, I think he's really close. And given again how good he was versus men last season, the skating is going to be the concern when he gets to the NHL regular season games. How quickly does he transition to the pace? Doesn't mean I don't think he's not going to be a very good player long term, but there might be that initial transition period. But if he does, I think he has more than enough skill in hockey sense to be in that type of conversation if he's able to elevate into a top nine role for Minnesota.
And then I think you mentioned him a little bit earlier, but one of the more exciting young teams in the NHL this year is going to be the Ottawa Senators, and Shane Pinto would be kind of the rookie to watch when it comes to the Calder conversation this year. 32nd overall pick, so the first pick of the second round just a couple of years ago. Really, really good the last 2 years at North Dakota. Came up 7 points in 12 games last year for the Senators. I mean, Shane Pinto, if he gets the opportunity, is a guy who I think there could be some buzz for.
Yeah, and he's looked really good in the preseason too, carrying over from what you saw in the NHL last season. And I think there's deserving attention for Pinto, a very well-rounded player. He's got great individual skill, great hockey sense. He can score tough goals. He's a very reliable two-way center. Skating's just okay, but I think he's shown so far that the pace of the NHL has not that big of an issue for him at this current stage in his development. And given kind of, building off the points you've already said in terms of opportunity, there is roster spots here in Ottawa, and I believe there is – I didn't get the exact details, but it seems like Colin White might have some injury concerns there too now. So that just creates more opportunity there for him to get extended ice time and be an important part of this team and potentially enter the Calder discussion.
Among the centers, I think you're kind of looking at – I don't know if McMichael is necessarily going to play center this year in Washington, but if he makes the team, Connor McMichael and Anton Lundell, a couple of guys who maybe are a little further down the radar of guys people are talking about for this, probably because Lundell only kind of just got back on the ice. But what do you think of their candidacies respectively?
Yeah, those are good teams that they're both part of in terms of the overall rosters. It's going to be harder to snag away top nine forward roles, harder to stack away power time roles, particularly in Florida, as opposed to more than Washington. Florida was such a deep offensive team last season, and Sam Bennett seems to have rediscovered himself there. We'll see whether that carries over to this season. So I don't know. Maybe Lundell has to play in Syracuse for a period of time. Maybe not. We'll kind of see how they plan to use them. But I see McMichael having opportunity there in Washington. They aren't, I believe, fully healthy yet either. So McMichael was so, impressive last year versus men. He's been, was great as a junior. Their size and skating has always been a concern with him, but he just scores wherever he goes and shows great individual creativity. That it wouldn't surprise me as a 20-year-old if he steps in and shows he can play in the National Hockey League.
Do we need to be talking about Hendrix Lapierre in that conversation for the Capitals as well?
They both had good camps. I would expect if it comes down to one of the two, it's going to be McMichael because Lapierre still has junior eligibility. After what I thought was not, was a good, not amazing QMJHL season, it is good to see. And also when he went to his U20 camp, I didn't really hear a ton of positive comments from scouts about him at that camp. It is good to see that he's had a very strong preseason with Washington.
When was the last time a goalie won the Calder Trophy? I mean, I'm thinking back, and is it Steve Mason, 08-09? Is that the last goalie we had here win the Calder?
That would be. And, it's always tough trying to project, the rookie goaltenders because playing time is such a big component. It helps a little bit, unfortunately, for Florida fans that Sergei Bobrovsky has not been the most reliable goaltender the last couple of years. So you can envision a way that Spencer Knight gets 25 games, 30 games, 40 games with Florida. The thing about Spencer Knight, projecting him to be of that echelon of player, is that I don't think, you know, I don't think he's going to be that good that quickly, even though I think Spencer Knight is an absolutely fantastic prospect. Just the track record of 20-year-old goalies playing at that level is almost non-existent in the National Hockey League. John Gibson had to play a full year in the American League. Andre Vasilevsky played a full year in the American League. Robin Lehner played a full year in the American League. Jacob Markstrom was one of the most premium goalie prospects. Going back about 10, 15 years ago, took years in the American League before he came up. So a 20-year-old actually breaking in and making an impact is almost unprecedented. I think it's going back to like Marc-Andre Fleury. I think Carey Price would be the exact last one who did that. And I'm not sure I'm ready to say Spencer Knight is going to have the trajectory of Carey Price, even though I think he's an excellent goalie prospect. If I had to pick a goalie who's going to have success, it'd probably be Alex Nedeljkovic, who by some technicality appears to still be Calder eligible.
That is correct. Yeah, he did not play, I think it's 25 games that he would have needed to play last year, and he came in just under that. So even though Alex Nedeljkovic was already a Calder finalist, because he only played 23 games last season, he is eligible again. Now, what I wonder, like, if you're a vote, and I am a voter, so I guess maybe I should ask this of myself, like, how does it color, you're eligible, but if someone was a finalist last year, I wonder how it colors voters, like, predispositions to put a guy on their ballot or not.
It'll be interesting. I would hope that people would just vote for the best player. But there might be some biases if it comes to that, and that Nedeljkovic has another good season and has earned consideration, especially since we imagine he'll play a lot more than he did last season too. If he, you know, he's the guy in Detroit right now, and if he has a good year, you're looking at a 50-60 game season likely for him, and it's going to be hard to avoid this conversation.
It is, and I can just say for myself, I fully plan to consider everyone who meets the criteria, you know, equally without it. But it is one of those narrative elements that I think, you know, it at least you have to talk about whether or not it could play a factor. So,
oh yeah, I mean, we deal with this every year with the older players, like the Russians.
Right, the Russians. Over. Yes.
Yeah, I have to have to deal with the nonsense from people who's like, oh, it's not fair that Kaprizov is eligible. It's like, well, if you don't think it's fair, change the rules.
That's right.
You know, the rules are the rules. But yes, it does play into people's. It will play into people. It might play into people's biases. Anyways, Kaprizov still ran away with it last year, even though there were those oppositions to his claim to the Calder.
Yep. All right. So with that said, we've discussed a lot of the candidates, Corey. Give me your top three going into the year. You know, obviously we're not voting on who deserves it. We're saying on who you're predicting will finish in the top three.
Yeah. It's going to be, I would say, tough for me to see a way, even though I think guys like Sider and Drysdale are excellent, excellent prospects, it's going to just be tough for them to have the kind of offense that's going to be required of them to be in that conversation. So my number one candidate would be Trevor Zegras. I think he's going to have a fantastic season. I think he's going to, even though he is playing on the West Coast and it's probably not going to be a strong Anaheim team, I think he is the guy who is most likely to pop, become an impact player in the National Hockey League next season. And right behind him, not surprisingly, is his fellow NTDP teammate and World Junior teammate for 2 years in Cole Caulfield. Hard to bet against a guy who just went to the Stanley Cup final, was an important part of why they went to the Stanley Cup final. I don't know if he's going to have – I think the hype machine probably got a little too much behind him, but that's fine. I mean, he's played so well to deserve it. I think he's going to have a very good year. In terms of a goal expectation, I'd say 25, but maybe he could hit like 27, 28 too, which I think – I know – I'm sure people were like, well, why didn't you say 35? Why didn't you say 40? Well, 28 would be like a really, you know, that'd be among what, that's second or third on almost any team in the National Hockey League.
Correct.
And for a rookie, that'd be a very excellent season. And that's a guy that I would, you know, bet big on. You know, Quinton Byfield could have been in that mix for me, but because of his injury, it's tough to see him, you know, elevating to that level, and you know, until we know more, as we're recording this, last night was the night of the injury, and we really don't have much more to go off then. And if we really kind of want to go, you know, for maybe someone that maybe you know non-conventional, I'm going to say William Eklund for number three. I think San Jose is not going to be very good. He will have lots of opportunity. I think he's an excellent player, and he's looked very good in the preseason so far. And I think his skill set translates to the NHL very well.
I'm going to go with Caulfield at number one. I really think, you know, on a team in Montreal that's going to be, I still think a good team. I don't know if they're a playoff team, but they're still going to be a good team. A lot of exposure. I think he's going to play a prominent role. I think he's going to score a lot of goals. He's my preseason number one, followed by Zegras, who I just think is going to be such a fun highlight reel kind of playmaker. And I'm going to go with Shane Pinto at number three. Is a little bit of a dark horse. I think the opportunity is there in Ottawa. And I think that's going to be a really fun team. A lot of young players and just a fun team to follow the entire season.
So you're scorning your readers by not putting Sider in there.
Well, I'm not going to make a homer pick on the national show here. And plus, we don't even know that he's on the roster yet. I do think he's been really good. If he makes the roster and he's on the first power play and in the top six, he's going to be a contender. But for right now, I'm going to stick with Shane Pinto at three.
And for the same thing with Drysdale, with Sider, and with maybe even like a Thomas Harley, if he were to make the Dallas, like getting first power play opportunity for a defenseman is very difficult. You know, does he going to take away Hronek's ice time? Is Drysdale going to take away ice time from some of those other defensemen in Anaheim who are a little bit more established? And obviously in Dallas they have Klingberg and Haskin in there. So for defensemen, it could be because there's only one defenseman on the power play traditionally, it's tougher for those guys to elevate into those type of roles.
Yeah, I would say of the Detroit guys, if Raymond makes the roster, I think he's got a better Calder shot, partly just because of the deployment opportunity than Sider would. Even though we don't know for sure that Raymond's on it yet, and we're pretty convinced that Sider will be, I might even say Raymond's odds are a little better.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's move now into our last segment for today. And in the intro, I think I called it prospect pools we think will take a step forward. But what we're really going to talk about is teams that we think are going to take a step forward this year on the backs of their prospect pools, like young groups of talent that we think are going to propel NHL teams to take a step this year. And I think that conversation really has to start with the New York Rangers.
Yeah, the New York Rangers have had, you know, they've won several lottery picks with Alexis Lafreniere with the first overall pick a couple years ago, Kaapo Kakko with the second pick years before that. And it's not just those two guys, although those two are the main discussion points with this team. This is now a team that wasn't bad last year. They weren't great, but they weren't bad. They were one of the leading goal-scoring teams in the league 2 years before that. And now, you know, you look at the success that they had with Shesterkin and Net. You look at some of the young talent. They have, you know, a decent group of veterans around that young talent. And the question is this the year the Rangers take the step forward? And I think there is definitely a path for them to become a playoff team and maybe even make a little bit of noise in the playoffs. Maybe not be a contender, but at least be a formidable team. And that has to start with Lafreniere and Kakko taking the step forward. Both of them, I think, have similar questions. Both of them, I think, are incredibly skilled players, intelligent players who can score and are competitive, but both have had struggles with the speed of the National Hockey League. That was, you know, their skating was always kind of the concern when you watched them in their draft years. And sometimes those guys just take more time. Everybody has a weakness, and sometimes it's the skating for some players. But if you kind of look historically at players who may not have exceptional skating as teenagers, those guys just need typically time for their bodies to mature, for them to adjust to the speed of the level. The body is an important component because you need to be able to win battles. If you can't blow by guys, you got to be able to at least you know, muscle your way through some puck battles to win along the boards, around the net, if you get challenged off the rush. And I think with those guys, it's just going to take some time. And it's why, you know, I'm not sure it's going to be this year, but I can see a path where they pop this season.
I think the Rangers in general are going to take a step this year. And I do think both of those guys you just mentioned are driving forces as to why. I just think with Kako, there's too much talent there. He's been, this will be year three now in the league for him. I think he should be comfortable enough, know enough the ways to kind of be able to make an impact in spite of not being a burner, right? Like, and I think he can use his body. He's strong. I think he's gonna be able to protect the puck and use the skill. And that combination, I think, is just going to help him win a lot down low. And so when you have that, he's going to make plays. I think he's going to finish plays. And he's, I think, one of the breakout player candidates, along with the guy who went right ahead of him, Jack Hughes, in that draft, to me. And we can kind of jump off right from there to go into New Jersey, because really they're right in that same tier of team that has the potential to jump into the playoffs this year, driven largely by guys like Jack Hughes and Ty Smith. You know, you could see Alexander Holtz at some point this year. You could see Dawson Mercer at some point this year.
Yeah, you know, if you look at Dom's projections at our website, he kind of sees them as one of those teams that will take a big step this year. I think he has them as either a bubble. I think he has them as a bubble playoff team right now. Part of that is because they added Dougie Hamilton during the offseason, but I think there's going to be some big steps from some of those young guys, in particular Jack Hughes. Ty Smith got a little injured here in the preseason. I think the hope is he won't be out too long. But when he comes back and they have more of a healthy roster, you know, I think there could be some success for this team. You know, with Jack, the question hasn't been on the talent. He's an exceptional skater. He has great individual skill and playmaking ability. You know, he's not the biggest guy, but I think he's shown he can create a lot of chances in the NHL. The question with Jack has just been, can he finish at even an average NHL ability? You know, because if he does that, I think he's going to score a lot of goals. And as long as he gets some secondary scoring, and Ty Smith is close to as good as he was last year to be like a nice, you know, second best defenseman behind Dougie Hamilton, at least offensively, you know, they've got weapons to work with now.
Yeah, and with Hughes, you talk about like just finishing at an average level. That really is the key, because he's going to create so many opportunities that you can just play the percentages with him. Like, he's going to create enough dangerous chances that a 10% shooting percentage or on-ice shooting percentage results in a lot of points for Jack Hughes. But you got to be able to be at that average level to expect to be able to play the percentages that way.
Yeah, and you know, you hope over time it works out that way. He's never really been the biggest goal scoring threat ever in his life, but I think they just got to hope, like, he doesn't improve to being a truly dangerous goal scorer. He's just got to be able to convert enough of the scoring chances he converts off of his skating primarily to maybe, if he adds 5-10 more goals last year, even if it's like 5-7, I don't think we're looking at his season last year in nearly the same lens as has probably been discussed, because his assist rate was rather solid and his play driving was rather solid, I thought. And with New Jersey, they have a lot of young depth. But I would say the difference between them and the Rangers is there's a little bit of a time frame difference there. But I think you look at the Rangers with where Keandre Miller was last year, where he was so excellent, and you think that, you know, whether it's Zach Jones or Nils Lundqvist, maybe even Braden Schneider, the young goalie Shesterkin, they seem maybe a year or two ahead in the time frame right now. And you know, obviously, you know, help having guys like Panarin and Zibanejad and others helps with their time frame a little bit. But I think there is some real depth there with the Rangers in terms of the young players. We haven't even talked about Vitali Kravtsov yet, a top 10 pick. We'll see whether he has an impact this year or not. Whereas the Devils, I think they're just hoping for progress from the bottom to, you know, at least maybe being in a playoff discussion at some point this year, even if they don't make it, at least look like you're threatening at some point.
If I gave you the choice between those two, one of them makes the playoffs, who are you taking?
Oh, necessary. I think the Rangers are ahead. They just have more pieces there right now. I think the question for me would be phrased differently. I would phrase, what's more likely, the Rangers being a top three seed in their division or the Devils making the playoffs? I think that would be a more interesting debate. And then, but I think long term, if you look at the talent in both of those organizations, I think the young talent is kind of similar. The Rangers have a few more veterans. Devils have maybe caught up a little bit with the addition of Dougie Hamilton, but I think both of those organizations are definitely trending in a very good direction.
All right, a couple organizations that I think are going to maybe be a little more dependent on purely their young talent. That's the Ottawa Senators and the Los Angeles Kings. Los Angeles Kings do still have Anze Kopitar and Drew Doughty. I don't want to let those guys get lost in here. But especially when you look at the Ottawa Senators, I think we're at a point now where, you know, we'll see where the Brady Tkachuk contract situation goes. But those young guys are driving the bus in Ottawa.
Yeah, I mean, like you have Brady, you have Tim Stützle, you have Josh Norris and Drake Batherson there now, all of which are extremely important players for that team. Shane Pinto, as we discussed earlier, we expect will become a notable part of their lineup this season. This is a year that I think you are hoping that Ottawa shows some progress. I don't think realistically you can look at them and say this is a playoff team, though. They're probably still way too young. And they didn't have a bad year last year. They weren't a top. They weren't a playoff team. Obviously, they weren't at the bottom of the barrel though. So I think you kind of hope for a little bit of progression there. Playoffs may be too much to ask, but I think if they go on some runs here or there, they have some nice stretches where they look dangerous. Maybe they finish a couple of points away from the playoffs. Whether it's 5 to 10, I think you can call that for a successful year. And then once you see the signs of that, if you're Ottawa, if you have that kind of progression this year where maybe you get closer to the playoffs, maybe an inch right up to there, you can start sending the signals that, okay, now it's time to start adding external pieces. It's time to start going after free agents and spending money, which I know has always been an issue there because this is the time now.
The key for me with Ottawa really is going to come down to a lot of Josh Norris and if he's ready to be kind of the guy for them. And if he is, then, I still don't think they're a playoff team. I think that division is too stacked up top with Tampa, Toronto, Boston, Florida. I don't think Ottawa's better than Montreal. Like, to me, there's no road to the playoffs for the Senators realistically, but I do think there's a real road to like putting themselves on the doorstep. And a lot of it, I think, goes through Josh Norris. The center position is so important. I mean, Shane Pinto obviously can be a factor there too, but with Norris, what he showed last year, if he takes a little more step, I think you're all of a sudden talking about a team that knows where it's going down the middle. And to me, that's maybe the biggest question that an NHL team has. I think Josh Norris is a potential answer, but I think he needs to show it this year to really feel good about Ottawa maybe a year from now talking about where we're talking about New Jersey.
Yeah, I currently project Norris as a first line center, but he hasn't. You know, he had a really good year last year, but you can't say he had a no doubt he's a first line center kind of production year, which is fine. He's still rather young. But you look what he did his first pro year, fantastic year in the American League. Then he follows up with that with a very solid rookie NHL season. You're right. What he does this year will be a very important defining moment for them in figuring out what their centers of the future really look like. And it may not be this year for a while. I agree. They're probably not in the playoffs this year. But you want to see the progress from those guys because – then you, like I said, you can start adding externally, and there's more guys coming. You know, they have already in the pro level: Jacob Bernard Docker, Lassie Thompson, Igor Sokolov. You know, who probably is on the minors. I think Alex Formanton could be an important player for them this season. And then you have a top five pick in Jake Sanderson, who's going to turn pro likely at the end of the year, and then Ridly Gregg, who I think is also a very important prospect, likely joining the team next year. So, again, I think realistically, it's not the playoffs, but I think you're hoping 2 years, 3 years, you're starting to have that conversation there.
And honestly, things can turn fast, but you need a couple guys to pop big. If whether it's Norris, whether it's Stützle, whether it's Sanderson walking in and having like a Miro Heiskanen-like impact, those things can change your timeline fast, but you kind of have to wait for them to happen to count on it.
Yeah, will he have that kind of sure offense, you know, we'll see. But yes, if he could be like Heiskanen, if he could be like McAvoy, it would go a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, shifting gears to Los Angeles. And I said driven by the young guys. Maybe I'm even a year ahead on saying that because even as we talk about Quentin Byfield and we don't know where his leg stands, this is still a team where I think your best players are still Kopitar, the couple guys they added this offseason, Victor Arvidsson, Philip Deneau, Alex Iafallo certainly in that conversation as well. They sign Alex Edler. But I think you're starting to see the entry of one of the NHL's best farm systems. You're starting to see a lot of them enter the NHL now. And Gabe Vilardi obviously has been there for a little bit. We'll see whether Byfield's there. Mikey Anderson is there. You're going to start to see Tobias Bjornfoot, potentially Alex Turcotte, I don't know where Arthur Kaliev's timeline is, but when we talk about LA, I think this is a year that you're going to start to see a lot of the most exciting young prospects in this farm system.
Yeah, I think LA is in a different spot than those other three teams we discussed so far in Ottawa, New Jersey, New York, where the young players are there, the prominent roles on the team. You're expecting them to be a big part of why you're better this season and the season after. I think LA is a little bit behind them in the timeline. I think LA has accumulated all the talent. They've had a bunch of draft picks, high draft picks. And I think you're hoping this season that you're starting to see a glimpse of the progress. And I think you're hoping that by a lot of these guys go to Ontario in the American League and have lots of success and start to push some of the veterans for ice time. You know, there are some young players on the team that have been impressive. You mentioned Bjornfoot, you mentioned Mikey Anderson. I think, you know, I think you're hoping Gabe Velarde takes a step this year. Elias Anderson, who was a top 10 pick acquired from the New York Rangers, who was not having much success with the New York Rangers organization at all, had a, you know, a nice season last year with the Kings, has had a good preseason. And, you know, not all of these young guys are going to hit, but with LA, it seems to accumulate so many of them. That, you know, if, say, just picking on somebody for no apparent reason, let's say Erasmus Kapari doesn't work out, who's a first-round pick who I do like a lot, you hope maybe it's Elias Anderson or Mikey Anderson or someone like a Jared Anderson Dolan who evens that out. I don't know if you're going to see massive production from the young guys this year at the National Hockey League level, but I think after having so many draft picks the last couple of years, if you're a Kings fan, you're hoping to see some steps forward right now at the American League level, and then hopefully by mid-year and towards the end of the year at the NHL level.
What's interesting to me about LA's situation is that I actually think, you know, I'm not going to say that they are a playoff team, but there's a path to the playoffs in that division. Part of it depends on what you make of Seattle and how good they're going to be right away. But to me, out west, it starts with Vegas, obviously, and then it's a lot of questions.
Yeah, and obviously Dom's model seems very optimistic about Seattle. I'm not quite sure I share his enthusiasm for that roster, but I think that, you know, it's definitely not a bottom feeder roster. I don't think that they should have some success this season. It's kind of funny you mentioned the thing about their division is that if you almost talk to anybody who works at any capacity in with those teams, they all mention that, you know, they'll say we have a chance because of this division. So that can't apply to everybody. Somebody's gonna lose games. But yes, the division is definitely very weak right now. And, you know, will it be the Kings? Will it be the Sharks? You know, it's going to be tough for either of them, but somebody's got to win games, and time will tell over the course of the season who those teams are.
All right, so they get at least three playoff teams. Let's run through these really quick and say who you're taking as the three playoff teams. So Vegas obviously is going to be one of them. Are you taking Vancouver as one of them?
So, you know, obviously Vancouver has some very interesting players. In terms of, you know, obviously they have, I think Quinn Hughes will take some big steps this season. You know, I still think, you know, he was really good offensively the last season. His defense is never going to be what gets you excited about him because of his size, but I think he won't be as bad defensively as he was last year. And I think he can elevate into a premium role in that regard. So I could see Vancouver becoming a playoff team in that division. After that, though, you know, and then I presume Edmonton would be the other one, because after that, now you start talking about Arizona, who will obviously be a bottom feeder. You know, and Anaheim it's hard to see them being a playoff team. Calgary is the one that's probably the most interesting between those. Like it's probably gonna be some combination of those four. And if a team like LA were to rise and knock off one of Calgary or Vancouver, Calgary and Vancouver are going to have kind of the mediocre-ish season they had. And I think LA is going to need to have a lot of guys take big steps. I know they added Kachev. I know they added Deneau. I know they added Arvidsson. I'm skeptical that's enough to elevate them over those teams, but it could at least get them close enough to where if there's some good luck, some bad luck, some injuries, it could close that gap.
Goaltending is the big advantage I think Vancouver and Calgary have on LA, but if LA gets, you know, 9-10, 9-15 goaltending, I think they have a shot.
Yeah, and Cal Peterson hasn't looked too bad in NHL.
No, he hasn't. No, so it'll be an interesting season for LA. Maybe more of a getting guys in, maybe more like what Ottawa was 2 years ago or 1 year ago, starting to work guys in than where they are right now. But I'm so excited to see those LA guys start hitting the NHL, especially Alex Turcotte. And a guy who and Quentin Byfield if he can be healthy, obviously. But Alex Turcotte, I think, is a guy I'm excited to see whenever he makes his debut. Should be a lot of fun for people out in LA.
Yep, no, I agree.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Athletic Hockey Show's Prospect Series. Please follow the Athletic Hockey Show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating and a review. If you're enjoying the show, that really helps us out. You're also going to want to subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. Starts with a 30-day free trial and then just 99 cents a month after that. Right now, you can also save 50% on an annual subscription to The Athletic when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Talk to you soon.